Chapter 34. When you sat up, struggling for breaths you did not need to take, wet only with the sweat trickling under the dormant bones of your exoskeleton, you saw not the canopy of trees overhead, but a filmy white length of sheeting. You had been moved. You were lying down flat, not bent in the curved posture that you had been taught to adopt, and your sword was tucked beneath your arm, and you had been upended onto a thin blanket that nonetheless let you feel each blade of grass and uneven mound of turf beneath, and feel the beating sun overhead, and hear the shrill host of outside creatures. Camilla Hecht sat beside you, and she did not flinch when you sat up all at once. You were in a larger clearing, with a huge mess of crushed boughs beside you, some of which had been pressed into service to hold up the tent you lay beneath. Beyond the tent curved the great metal belly of a shuttle. Your mind idiotically focused upon its bizarre shape and style. It was not a cohort shuttle, nor any kind of shuttle of the Nine Houses, and not only because it had not been adorned with even a single bone. It was made of very shiny silver steel, and its heat treatment made it sizzle, with a sort of wobbling radiance sitting just above the hull. It was also thoroughly battered and singed. You would not have flown it 10 feet above the ground, let alone into atmosphere or the black depths of space. It was small, no more than 3 bodies wide and 3 bodies tall, and the thought of being forced inside curdled you. But your distaste and paranoia were stopped in mid-swing by Camilla saying with barely repressed intensity,
"So?"
you said.
"He's in there."
The cavalier of the 6th house looked at you. Then she collapsed back in a long, controlled movement. She lay flat on her back, staring sightlessly at the sky, half shadowed by the sheeting, half glowing in the light. At last she gave a long, shuddering breath and sat back up with the same abruptness.
"Good,"
she said, and she smiled very briefly. This smile lit the corners of her face like a rising comet. It made her look, in fact, ridiculously like her adept.
"What now?"
You held the carefully assembled fragments of skull between your hands and hoped that "he is" had not become "he was." Then you crushed the bone between your fingers. The cavalier next to you reached out reflexively, then stopped herself, and you kneaded the fragments within your palms until you could winnow out the glue, which, thank God, had been chemical in nature. It might have very easily been derived from keratin, which would have been a momentary confusion and annoyance. The glue was expunged as a knotty collection of gummy nodules, which you discarded, and left you with a thanagy-rich clay. You considered this malleable stuff for a moment before knitting it between your hands. Phalanges spurted from the mass, then a distal row, then a proximal row of carpal bones and a length of articulated wrist. It was not the sheer animal pleasure of Ianthe's arm, but it was easy, and it was satisfying. You said, "I could simply give you a full skeleton frame."
"Don't,"
said Camilla quickly, and paused, and said, "That's going to get me in trouble." "The warden specifically requested movement."
"I don't mean him," said his cavalier.
You tossed her the hand bones, and she caught them on reflex. You grasped your sword and stood, and before she could prevent you, you walked around the side of the bizarre shuttle. There was some manner of open cargo delivery hatch, or means of entrance, with the door hoisted up on a jack so that fresh air could circulate within the shuttle. You stood in the blinking sunlight before this open door on the flattened grass, and you looked inside. The 3 inhabitants stared back at you. The first was Captain Deuterus, a woman whose stretched-out corpse you had last seen riddled with bullets. She was sitting, not in her cohort whites, but in a drab, long-sleeved shirt of indeterminate colour and dark trousers. She looked like a shell of the crisp adept you had seen back at Canaan House, and less robust even than her corpse. She had lost significant weight from her already fragile necromancer's build. Her cheeks were dark hollows, and she clasped two crutches in her lap. Another woman sat close beside her, wearing her own shabby shirt of indeterminate colour, but as though it had been designed for her royal use. A woman you had last seen calmly falling to her death. Ianthe Tridentarius's features stared out of Corona Beth's face. An aurora of a face, with deep, lustrous skin and burnished hair and eyes of genuine violet, like plums. Both women were seated in the back of the poorly furnished shuttle, amid crude engines set in oil-reeking array beneath a thin metal grill, and a mess of boxes piled in every corner. Yet the Crown Princess of Ida, missing and presumed dead, filled up that space like a mass of flowers on a midden. She was in as blooming good health as could be, as vigorous as Deuterus was frail. The third staring inhabitant was not a person. It was an enormous flimsy poster in a chipped frame, the only sign of decoration in that untidy little shuttle. A head and shoulders photograph of an unsmiling, adamant person, in all assumption a woman, stared fixedly at you as though calculating how much effort it would take to snap your neck. She was dressed in black to the chin, and her red hair curled thickly about her neck and shoulders. Thick, itchy streams of blood began to ooze down your sinuses. That portrait frightened you more than anything you had seen since becoming a lictor. It scared the irresolute piss from your body. Yet you had never seen the face before in your life. The second house captain said, somewhat hoarsely, "Ninth?" You wiped your face before your hands flew to your exoskeleton again. It disgorged one of the 22 with ease, and you pulled open the letter marked, "To open if you meet Judith Deuterus." You translated without conscious thought. "Addressing the Lady Harrowhark Nona Jesmus, known as the Reverend Daughter by her own desire, now Harrowhark the First, from the same, now dead. Letter 12 of 24. If you meet Judith Deuteros, silence her. Kill her if necessary." The bones of Deuteros's jaw fused shut. You glued her bottom molars to her top molars immediately and cleaved her tongue to her palate. She said, "Hmm?" You took out a second letter, to be sure, although this one was in plain script and you had read it already. "Addressing the Lady Harrowhark Nona Jesmus, known as the Reverend Daughter by her own desire, now Harrowhark the First, from the same, now dead. Letter 5 of 24. Protect Corona Beth Tridentarius at all costs, even if this endangers your life. The work is forfeit if you contribute to her death by direct or indirect action. In the interests of the work, you may silence her, so long as this causes her no significant pain." In different handwriting. "P.S. or any pain at all." In yours. "P.P.S. I cannot guarantee a total absence of pain." The first amender. "P.P.P.S. There must be a total absence of pain, actually." In yours again. "P.P.P.P.S. We have jointly agreed on as little pain as may be achieved via the fullness of necromantic effort." And in the first, "P.P.P.P.P.S. XOXOXOXO. Corona Beth Tridentarius had already leapt to her feet and unsheathed a rapier you knew very well and which froze you to the core to behold. It was a ninth house rapier. The blade was black metal, with a plain guard and a hilt of the same colour. She stood before the mute shell that now constituted Deuteros, neatly at the ready with the rapier brandished and her left arm tucked behind her back. It was so like looking at Ianthe that you were differently bewildered. But you had already done the same to her, the tongue to the roof of the mouth, the teeth to the teeth, and so all she could say was,
"Hmm."
You drew your two-handed sword.
"Stop it!"
The sixth cavalier had joined this shitty tableau. She narrowed her eyes to slits in the sunshine. "I warned them already."
"I do this on a greater authority than your own."
"Balls," said Hecht succinctly. "Let them go." Then, "Why is that sword gummed up, and who taught you to hold it like that?"
"I refuse to..."
"What?"
"Your hands are too close together. Put your left hand at the bottom of the pommel. Tuck in the arm close to the chest. Right hand high on the hilt, close to the crossguard. Up a bit with your thumb."
"Yeah, that's more like it."
"You did all this," and she said, "Good.
Not like you have the muscle for a rising strike. Okay, now let Corona Beth and Judith go."
Your grip adjusted. You found it significantly less difficult to hold the sword pointed down than previously. You asked, "Why are you here? Why are you all alive? Why are you on the other side of the universe, in your own shuttle, innumerable years away from the Nine Houses? Why were your bodies not found at Canaan House?"
With her mouth a gruesome, stuck-together distortion, Deuterus had stood with a crutch shakily clutched beneath one arm and was now hauling herself toward you with an uprightness of posture that belied her physical weakness. It was still the cohort captain who silently approached, her dark eyes cold and level. You kept your bone-sheathed sword steady, though you would not, in any case, use it to kill her if you have to. The captain shouldered past an obviously reluctant Corona Beth. Their eyes met, and Judith shook her head in a minute no, and she stopped about a step before you. Then she grabbed a fistful of mother-of-pearl robes. You did not flinch. She said, as though sheer force of desperation could wrench coherent sound from a fused mouth. Camilla flew to her left side and Corona to her right, but she swung her crutch at them. Her grasp was surprisingly strong, and as she said, "Woo!" you unfused lips, tongue and teeth. You always were too curious for your own good.
"Nyah! Warn him, Lictor. He has been infiltrated, dammit, and I can do nothing. I am a prisoner of war. If you love him, tell the Emperor that the traitor has already..."
This last was nothing to do with you. Corona Beth, face set, had clasped her hand over the second house's mouth and manhandled her backward, which was very easy for someone of the third's stature to do to someone of the second's. Ianthe's twin was stone-eyed, and the expression she and the captain gave each other was antagonistic, to say the least. Judith was humiliatingly bundled back within the confines of the shuttle. Corona Beth kicked a lever close to the door. The great shady overhead hatch started winding down, and you watched the darkness claim her and the furious dignity of the downed soldier beneath the cold gaze of that too familiar portrait. Judith was signing something to you, but you could not make out cohort signals. You'd never bothered yourself with the military. Camilla was picking up the crutch. She said restlessly, "Look, we should go. We weren't meant to be here." You said,
"You are a fool if you think I will let you leave like..."
"I evoke the rock that is never rolled away," she said instantly. She was a quick study. "Let us leave. Tell no one we were here. Don't ask any more questions. We're not on the same side anymore, Ninth. I owe you. I owe you everything. But things have changed." It was your turn for your tongue to cleave to the roof of your mouth. The once cavalier of the sixth house looked at you impassively, and she said, "I'm sorry, if that helps." You said,
"It doesn't."
"Fair." Let me ask one thing, you said. One single question, just the one, for the sake of what I have just done for you, and for the Master Warden of the Sixth House. Camilla looked at you distantly, and eventually said, Ask. I'm not going to promise that I can answer. You said, Who took you away from Kanan House? Who are you with, Hecht? You call them Blood of Eden, she said. That evening, Mercy Morn came to fetch you from the surface of a planet you had killed, with almost no thought to its murder. Indeed, you had felt almost nothing, and you said very little, which met your teacher's needs excellently, as she had nothing to say to you except, You smell like dirt. She piloted you back to the Mithraeum in silence. You watched the retreating planet out the window, and it looked no different, except that perhaps the deep water that lined the equator in chilly, juxtaposed slabs of ice seemed more cracked and turbid than previous. It was safely dead, with its cavorting animal populace unaware of their long-term death sentence. Worms crawled within the miserable, fetid pit of you.